Okay, I'd like to call the Appropriations Committee meeting to order. Today is August the 24th, and it is 10 o'clock a.m. First order of business is roll call.
Congresswoman Rebar.
Here.
Congresswoman Shaw. Congressman Big Horse. Congresswoman Lemon.
Present.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Present.
Congresswoman Stabler.
Present. We do have a quorum, and we did have notice from Congressman Big Horse and Congresswoman Shaw that they would not be here this morning. I believe Congresswoman Shaw is going to try to be here this afternoon. Next is prayer. Y'all join me in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, and we thank you for this opportunity we have to serve the Osage people. We ask that you watch over our people and all the people around the world. Take care of anyone that has any health issues or any who's dealing with any mourning today. We ask all this in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. Next is approval of minutes.
Chair.
Congresswoman Rebar.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to approve the Appropriation Committee meeting minutes dated August 16th, 2022, as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
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 Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Next on the agenda is matching grant funds, and our acting treasurer, I guess, is Mr. McIntosh is here, so we'll turn this section over to him.
Matching grant fund, currently the balance sheet shows fund equity balance.
How did we miss that? Yes.
Yes, ma'am. It came at 9:57 a.m., and this one is communication C-2238.
Okay, thank you.
The matching grant fund, revolving fund, as of July 31st, 2022, the balance sheet reflects fund equity balance of $1,247,509. Currently this year, the transfer outs out of this fund only reflect at $2,549.89. And there's a transfer in back from grants and contracts where I believe that was related to, there was a practice of when a match was required in a fund to move that entire match out of the matching grant fund into that special revenue fund. When that occurs and that you operate through that grant, you get to the end of that project period, which would encompass all the budget periods basically in the grant. If you didn't fully expend the award, the required match is not required because it's in proportions, typically 80%. The grant will pay for 20% is expected in a match. If you don't fully expend that grant, then that leftover match money needs to come back to the match granting fund.
Okay.
So the way we'll be operating moving forward, I think we discussed in the last appropriations meeting when I was here, is that essentially, you know, when those grants require those matches, then that money would be put in this revolving fund. And then at the each end of a month, when we close a month, we would review the requirement and the need based on the expenditures from that month or year to date, and then do it like a drawdown out of the matching grant fund to that grant. And that way you stay in line throughout. And just more of an FYI of a change that we're going to be doing moving forward to keep us more in line with the balance and what the potential obligations are out of this fund. So that's why when you look at the second sheet and you say what is transferring from grants and contracts, that's what that would be. You'd also notice that there in the expenditures transfer out from match fund. So kind of another note to kind of in regards to this report, those are two new accounts that came about from the audit findings of 2019, where we were discussing and also in the end of the audit of fiscal year 2020, that we had trouble reconciling the transfer in and outs. This is the example that I provided where I said I set up a combination of 20 different accounts so that we can track and reconcile that now in a matter of 2 minutes. It's pretty easy to reconcile once you establish this type of process. So those are new transfer in and outs, but I think it helps explain really more where the money's coming from and where the money went. So that being said, on that balance, if you'll turn to the next page, it's kind of the rolling year-over-year fund balance sheet. It agrees to the balance sheet. There's where, from that fund balance, we would need to look and consider what are the potential obligations against the balance that's in this revolving fund. And I believe that's where we discussed in the last appropriation meeting that looking back at the appropriation on those match requirements for 22, that the I think the legislation said that that was to be funded from the general fund, not from the matching grant fund. So all that match has been made from the general fund, as the legislation stated. And that's why there hasn't been very little activity on the transfer outs in 22 out of this fund, because the matches came out of the general fund.
In 19?
No, this is in current year 22. We can go back and, but I have reviewed that. Confirm that, I think, a couple times this year, because you always question why money's not transferring out of the matching grant fund. Well, we went back and looked at that, I think, the big appropriation that has the matches in them, and it says from the general fund. So we can correct that.
We're making corrections. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's something we can look at, but that's where Jordan said he didn't have that in the general fund the last time, the last appropriations meeting when I was here. And this is where I'm showing the $167,000 of that's what the required matches for fiscal year 2022 would be that I have. So out of the $1,247,509 with those 22 obligations, if you were to, you know, change that language and say it's from the match granting fund, I'm showing that the $167,000 is in here and can pay that match. After that, then I'm showing that the leftover balances from ONCA 18-20, ONCA 18-74, and ONCA 19-41 accumulates to $1 million. But I don't think that those ever came to fruition of us receiving those awards. So therefore, moving forward, we don't need a fund that's matching grant fund because there is excess in it. Now, in the same regards, there's potential that you can identify these funds, if I understand the revolving fund correctly, mm-hmm. and you could move those funds back out of the matching grant fund, you know, some portion of that $1 million and maybe put it towards more current year. I don't know if we would put that in projected revenue, but this is a potential source of funds if we ever get in a tight position that we could explore.
Well, it's a revolving account, so just good for us. We don't have to appropriate anything for a while.
Right, right. I wouldn't suggest like funding the matching grant fund for any of the 23 until we chip away at this balance. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's going to need an appropriation for 23 because of the current balance that we're carrying.
Okay.
Chair, that was my question. Was that with any of the submissions for the FY23, was there anything submitted that was requiring a matching grant fund?
I'd have to review those documents. I'm guessing that it's probably the same here, the Title Family Pres and Title 4B. I guess those are moving to the new health organization. Food distribution had a required match. Farmers Market shows a required match and also an EPA grant. So I'll check on those three.
Okay.
Chair, because I was wanting to make sure I don't want to get in the same bind where it comes out of general treasury rather than the matching grant fund. So then Jordan, can you and Tyler look at that? I just want to make sure that we don't repeat the same mistake. So when you pull it out of the revolving fund rather than the general treasury, then that their financials would show a transfer in?
It would, out of the match revolving fund, that's where it would show, just as on that second page shows, transfer out from match fund.
Okay.
And then when you go into the special revenue fund, transfer out from match fund is 8803, and I believe 8804 is transfer in from match fund. So you can always put those two accounts and see that it left the match grant fund, and then you can look at the federal expenditure report, and it will show that that was transferred in from our match fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a clear... It helps when you review monthly financials to know where that money came from. So currently in the 22 federals, you will see transfer in from general fund.
Okay.
And that's how it kind of redesigned the chart of accounts to address that kind of that hiccup we had in 20 where we couldn't reconcile the transfer in and outs because it was everything was running through two accounts. So in this setup, like I said, they're in tandem and they're real easy to read on the financials.
Okay, good.
Good
deal. And, Chair, one more question. With the $40.6 million, the dollars that we received for the broadband?
Yes.
Was there a match to that at all?
Not to my understanding.
Okay.
Now, we have a meeting scheduled tomorrow morning to get into more details and kind of review the compliance side to really ask those questions. But to my understanding, there is not currently.
Okay. If you find out differently, you let us know.
Oh, certainly. Yes. Okay. Me or the grants director will.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Jordan.
The $167,000, it doesn't match exactly what was appropriated to those grants for the tribal match portion. So I'm just wondering what the differences can be attributed to. For example, the EPA match that I have was for $49,217, and on the sheet we received, it shows $35,000. I just want to make sure I'm keeping accurate records.
That may be, I can review that and see if the additional funds have come down that required additional match.
Okay.
If there's a, you know, additional, but that's what I was given, provided here back, is this number's probably from May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Would it just be safer to assume then that the amount appropriated, the full amounts for the tribal match? Well, never mind. I think I answered my own question. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Yes, Jordan.
One more question. So my takeaway from the last time the matching grant fund was discussed was that although there was a balance of 1.2 million, that almost all of that was already earmarked for specific grants. And this time I'm hearing that, if I'm understanding correctly, that that is not the case. So can you tell us how much is earmarked for specific grants already?
Yes. If you turn to page 3 of the presentation, you see the balance sheet recon. Cash available, money that's due to another fund. Fund balance at $1,247,509. They're showing an estimated 22 obligations for grants would have been $167,000. And then I'll reiterate that on ONCA, the remaining $1 million that is in this match granting fund was appropriated in ONCA 18-20, ONCA 18-74, ONCA 19-41, which all total out to $1 million. Currently, that looks available.
Okay.
But in accordance with whether or not you're going to utilize that money or that grant, I'm still following through to make sure that these are not active grants before I truly say it's not earmarked.
Okay. And thank you, Treasurer McIntosh. I understand now. Appreciate you.
Okay. Everybody good on that issue?
Yes, and I have a question since we're going over this first piece.
Okay.
Is there a reason why you're marking the documents confidential?
I think it's just to me, it's more proprietary in turning in the documents. I was asked, are they confidential? I said, well, I would consider them proprietary because they're pertinent to this committee's business and meeting. It's public information. There's avenues to request, I believe, through public records request. Anyone can access the information. It was, I think, in conversation to me providing an investment report, not marking it, and if it's not marked proprietary and or, I guess, AKA confidential, that does not, I guess, essentially could be sent out and broadcast, emailed to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So if the committee doesn't feel it's proprietary information, then I will not mark it proprietary information, but I feel like it's, you know, there's avenues to request this information if anyone wants to request it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have had some discussion this morning on that, and we haven't come to an actual resolution of maybe redefining proprietary. I don't know if that's really necessary or not. We'll have to get with Trey and work on that. And
thank you. Mm-hmm. I was just curious because I just noticed that they were marked confidential, and then I was looking, I was like, what's confidential?
Yeah, and that's to
you
me.
Know?
It's,
yeah.
It's,
no.
I said, that was my remark, was that the confidential word sometimes is taken, you know, proprietary is usually more the word of.
Yeah, I am.
We don't have that stamp.
I should have mentioned that up front as we got into it, that he can resubmit these without the confidential stamp on them. And he's going to set aside a proprietary stamp. And so, and that's if we want to go with that too, if we want to change the definition of proprietary. And then, like he said, that's just that there's an avenue to acquire the information. It's not, we're not putting it on the web or something, but somebody can ask for it.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, and I look forward to clarifying that.
Yeah.
On the same page.
Yeah. Yeah, and this all was attributed back to some information that was not marked.
Correct.
And so we talked about re-educating everyone, not just Tyler, who's only been with us for a short while, but all directors. And so we'll get back on top of it. Okay, does anyone have any other discussion on this item? If not, we'll go on to the next item. And that's the IDC update and true up.
The update on IDC is I've currently had to peel back the original submission. When the health legislation passed, it kind of changed the dynamic of the IDC proposal that was in place for 22, being that the Department of Health was leaving out that last quarter. So that changed our pool, which then kind of changed what our base would look like. So being that those are submitted together to be negotiated together, I am now circling back after we spent the most of June and July working through that setup of how we're going to move forward in regards to the funding that was lost, you know, related to the health department moving out to Section 14. So now that we've kind of derived and figured out the avenues that we're going to go down since that and over the last 60 days, then I'm redoing the 22 proposal to be able to submit it, and I should have that submitted by Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a potential for an increase in the rate at the same time as our base is decreased, but the goal is to try to keep it under 25%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I don't know if this came to fruition or not. Was there an MOU established with the health system while they're still adjusting?
Yes, there's an MOU established that gets us through 9/30. This year, and I think as we get into the fiscal 2022 and 23 projected revenues, that just reminded me of something. I think I left off 22, but as we get into that, it'll show kind of how we're going to proceed over the next year and the projected revenue.
Okay.
But we still need to finalize that MOU for next year.
Okay.
But we do have one in place, and there was one put in place for to get us to the fiscal year end of this year, 22.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Congresswoman Rebard.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So in that IDC discussion with regards to the CCLPK, you'll see in their budgets when they're submitted, I think August 31st was the extension that they asked for. You'll see a line item that's new, that's contract services. And then that would be the amount. You're not going to recognize it in the IDC this year. And so, as I understand, the treasurer will be, they'll actually invoice them for those services, and then it'll be recognized in the treasurer's treasury tribal budget in their income. And so that's going to be something a little bit different for, you know, Congress to see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that was a good way to handle that. And so we won't expect to see that in the IDC mm-hmm. pool in any way. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to their, you know, to see their plan and their financials. But I'm so happy that you've got that worked out so we know what to expect and it makes sense.
Yeah, and the goal isn't had good meetings and good working relationship with the new CEO or Mr. Rogers. And I think when he hires his CFO, we're going to house him in our office for parts of the week to help bring, kind of correlate and introduce staff as well. You know, the goal is hopefully as we move forward over the next year that there's some succession as far as positions that may, when we lose this funding that health is paying us in 23, that maybe some of those positions transition into health, you know, and that people, we don't end up in a bind, but funding is always very tight related to those situations.
Mm-hmm.
A loss of, I think we lost $3.7 million in IDC funding, and I think that's two in the IDC proposals we discussed a little bit yesterday. Yes, in the budgets, in the tribal budgets this year, I did pick up professional fees to charge IDC in to help offset some of that loss. And then I've got definitions in regards to direct costs from the Federal Register too, that I think shows that it's allowable. It's being defined as a direct cost as long as it meets these certain measures.
Okay. Okay.
Chair, in that part, thank you for doing that because, you know, again, I don't, you know, how I feel about that because I still, the more IDC charge to our programs, you know, the less direct services we can provide. But I also acknowledge the admin piece that has to be done. And with the IDC, you know, departments that help support those programs. I am curious, you know, whenever you get your agreement done, that we get a copy just so that, I mean, it's up to executive as far as I'm concerned as to what method you use. And, you know, to your negotiations and things of that nature. But I would at least like to see the documentation that shows me which method we're using, what's being applied to IDC so that we can understand it. And I also think that's good information for your directors as well.
Right.
That was some conversation that I was had last night was, you know, how much is IDC? You know, so I'm, you know, telling them, and I said, well, you're also being charged on your professional fees.
Right.
And of course, that's a little cause because they know as the directors providing that direct service to our people that that looks a little bit different this year.
Right.
You know, so it's something they're going to have to figure out because that, but you made a great point yesterday. And I'll say that in when you start using contractual services or professional services for areas that could really be employment.
Right.
I mean, it's a balance. But now you'll be charging IDC on both of those types of services.
Yeah, so it doesn't really facilitate. If in my experience working in finance, directors, they usually know how their budgets work. And like I was saying, sometimes knowing that you don't charge on professional fees means that you can spend more money and not pay more money in the IDC. But yeah, I forget where I was.
So, and if I may, Chair, I just, you know, be that as it may, I still, there's some professional fees that I'm thinking about. I mean, our branch budget was increased because of it, and which increased our amount of outlay.
Right.
You know, so it does affect overall, like our projected revenue and our outlays and things of that nature. But I was thinking about the A&Es, you know, and thank goodness, I hope those are all going in cap assets and those ARPA where you're tracking it separately, because I would hate to have to pay IDC on for an A&E, because that's a service, you know, most certainly. And but I'm just like, okay, well, let's see how this works this year. I guess I'm not in favor of it. I'm, you know, but what I'm saying is, I just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Right. And so, I think in related to all of those ARPA projects, we did not put IDC in on the budgets that have been submitted and appropriated. They don't have IDC on any of the like the capital budgets that are in ARPA. The only IDC we're doing in ARPA was in the administration budget, and that's where the professional fees for the task force and things of that nature.
Okay. Well, and Chair, just one more comment is that, you know, if you're providing these services to our folks, to the directors and their programs, let's give them the utmost customer service for that dollar, because I don't feel like it takes a lot to do a contract. That's just my own opinion, because I've had to do many of them, and I believe, I know Congresswoman Stabler has too. Once you get it done, you know, you're setting up the PO and then you're just charging against it. But the directors are doing that, not really. I mean, I understand the process is the service that you're providing. But at the same time, if that's the case, then and you guys are just set on doing that, then let's just ensure that we're given the best service that our directors are paying for through IDC, because that's the way that I see that. I feel like those programs that support those departments, it's a service, are paying for it. So a lot of times you hear, I haven't seen my financials. I don't know what the balance is in the revolving fund I'm managing. I can't get a hold of someone in HR. I'm not, you know, there's a little bit of like, a lot of directors understand IDC and understand you're charging me for IDC for a service. And so I hope that there's maybe a growth in respect in that service that we provide back to these departments. You know, so it's easier to swallow, like, I'm going to pay this much. Because we have some heavy professional fees in some departments.
Correct.
So that's all. Thank you.
Can I comment?
Yes, go ahead.
I agree with everything that you stated. I've had the same conversations. You know, that's my standpoint, too, is, you know, we're taking money from programs to essentially pay our salaries. We are customer service. We're customer service to legislative Congress. We're customer service to the executive branch. We're customer service to all directors. And we're customer service to all members of this tribe. And that, you know, essentially that is, I agree, we are customer service. And I'm pushing forward with that. Of recent, we're holding more meetings. I'm meeting with individuals in regards to revolving fund balances and reviewing those with them to make sure we're on the same page. One, so I can provide accurate information. Here's the balances I'm showing. What's your current projects? That's going to help me get true obligations. And that way I can say, here's the funds available. Here's all the obligations. Here's what's left that, you know, can be reappropriated or used for another purpose. But I agree that that's a valid statement, and I agree. We're going to move forward in that fashion.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Okay. Then we will move on to the cap asset.
Madam Chair, I don't have a comment.
Oh.
I just have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe he stated it earlier, but I didn't write it down. And so did you say, Mr. McIntosh, that when you would have the final worked out for what the IDC is going to look, what it will be? What did you say? Did you have it by Friday?
I said I would be submitting it in on Friday.
This Friday. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I'm going to move on then now from to the cap asset review.
Okay. I believe you have an attachment with the balance sheet.
Which communication are you referring to?
Chair, I think it's C22-39.
39,
okay. The current balance sheet is July 31st, 2022. Shows fund equity at $7,247,218. Showing current year, fiscal year 2022, $600,000 was transferred in from the general fund. I show expenditures at $1,403,792. Consisting mainly of capital improvements and capital asset purchases. The with the current fund balance showing $7,247,218, coming off that I show that are obligated or projects that are still encumbered that have not completely been finished. would be, or in regards to being paid out, the expenditures. I'm still showing remaining balances in regards to the Skyway 36 North Hangar, ONCA 21-33. Still show remaining project balances, ONCA 21-43, ONCA 21-42, ONCA 20-63. And I show those current encumbrances at around $6.3 million.
And those are the only ones that have remaining balances? I just want to be clear. And all those prior are completed?
I am also showing ONCA 19-46 as having a remaining encumbered balance, a small, as well as ONCA 19-39. I don't know if we want to, me bring kind of this breakout detail of the history of all projects and go through that. It's kind of hard to print out. It's pretty.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Excel sheet. I know we've looked at it before in a meeting we've had.
Mm-hmm. So I'd say we've reviewed the projects as far as where they are right now. And we've gone through. So unless there's a hiccup somewhere that we need to be aware of. What I was just looking at was, you said there's $6.3 million still available in those open projects.
Yes, I was roughly showing the difference right now is excess funds or remaining funds in the balance that are not obligated at close to $900,000.
Okay.
And I think this, I show a trail of kind of how that money came about.
Okay.
And kind of the biggest contribution to that is I still show that on, it looks like in 2018, ONCA 17-102 and ONCA 18-38, there's still a substantial amount remaining from that. That's really about half of that number, 400,000. So. 17-102 and 18-38. Looks like the legislative branch pre-construction, construction, and capital asset funding. What my note says on the project.
Mm-hmm. I think, Chair, if I may, was that, I wasn't with Congress at that time, but was that part of when COVID happened? And then
yes.
They took that appropriation and rededicated it back to Treasury so they could access it. When the casinos shut down.
Mm-hmm. So there seems like there was some discussion later on, though, as to whether they actually used it or not. And so.
I don't know that they, I don't see that it got transferred back. Like I said, this is looking back at activity in 2018. I show that out of all the funds historically, it looked like up to, really those same ONCAs that about 529,000 had been returned back to Treasury over the life of the fund from 2012 through 2018. Okay. And then I think the question would be, or the question I would have is, if I recall, I think around in 2019, not that I recall, wasn't here, but in researching, it looks like around ONCA 19-21, in ONCA 19-46, that there may have been a change in terminology. And the question is, does the money remaining in that fund from all those prior appropriations stay in the cap asset fund? Or is it that at that point in time, do I start keeping a new record of funds available? And I think that's something that I'd like to look at and get clarification on just so we can move money in the right, or make sure that the money's falling in the right pathways that they should, but that's part of why this fund has that $900,000 is because it's accumulated since 2012.
Okay. Chairs, that so to my recollection, I think there was that Congress had, I don't know what a good word for that is, but they had taken the balance out of what they had, the commercial property fund, and put that balance into the PIF.
Yeah, I think that was
okay.
PIF, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so excuse me, I'm in the, I had to walk myself through that. That's a good question. If you want to formulate that to some degree, and then we could send that to our legal counsel, and maybe he could speak with the AG about that to get some clarification. I think that's a good question.
Yeah, and I think that's part of just, as we discussed, looking at the matching grant fund, of now that the financials are, you know, intact, that we can actually start looking at these fund balances and determining, you know, do we need to fund this, or what funds are in there and what are we doing with it? And mm-hmm. That way that we're not over-appropriating these funds and they're carrying huge fund balances, because in my mind that reduces the amount of money that your executive has to address needs through the current year.
Mm-hmm.
Not to have the funds locked up, mm-hmm. I guess, in a sense. Is
right.
Yeah, and have funds available when things come up that needs to be addressed. But
so I think, Chair, if you remember those, so like if they started a project and then they complete it and they still had money available on those, and a remaining our balance of unspent funds, then somewhere they could take that amount and reappropriate it. There was like a process. I don't know that we've ever actually done that.
Yeah, I think
that was the goal. Yeah. It per project, not the big balance and cap assets, but it was like per project. And then once it was complete, within so many days, you could, you know, the next time Congress met, you know, reappropriate it, yeah, or redirect those funds for either another project within cap assets or even a property improvement in the PIF or something like that.
Correct.
Other than us ever moving the money, thinking we were moving money out for COVID, I don't recall anyone ever bringing us anything about reallocating. I do know that a lot of the projects out there that it's like a warranty period. They hang on to it for a while to see if what's going to happen. And I take that back. Hominy did. They came in and reallocated their balance for further use within the same property, but just for different purpose. And so that's an interesting discussion we need to have so that we have a clear process of what happens with those funds.
May I ask, Chair, on the statement of revenue and expenditures, can you maybe explain how you're seeing, you know, that you have a capital asset purchase and then you have a capital improvement and then you also have construction?
Like the differences?
Yes, sir.
So typically, like a cap improvement would be, okay, we own the bank building. There's renovations taking place. We're going in, we're taking down walls, we're improving the roof, we're putting a new roof on. That's a cap we already own. Therefore, that's an improvement to that capital asset. So that's how you would define a capital improvement. You're improving something you already have.
Chair, if I may, what would be the difference then from the property improvement fund?
We review the activity in the property improvement fund to see if there's anything that needs to be capitalized, and that's part of our closeout process. So, yes, we review that activity in there to determine, but typically it's all going to be based on the threshold. Going to be based on a set of criteria to determine per gap if it's extending the life or improving the value of the asset. And there's an evaluation process that you do, and you have to make a decision based on those factors. And then that's what the auditors come in and audit us on, is what did you list as additions, And then they also scan it to make sure that we didn't miss anything. But that is one of the accounts that we look for capital improvement projects in, just as the cap asset fund for capital purchases.
So the PIF is mainly for maintenance and repair then?
Yeah, and sometimes that maintenance repair, sometimes that might meet the threshold that it qualifies as considered a cap improvement, mm-hmm. which on the governmental side, you're not going to see a big impact on the statement of revenue and expenditures because it's going to be shown as far as what the expenditure was. It's just down in the capital asset fund, the 9,000 fund is where we go and we say, hey, we need to add this to our cap assets.
Okay.
And we build it out there.
Okay.
But yeah, a lot of your capital improvements would be exactly as you stated, would be related to that PIF fund is where we keep a close eye to identify those.
Okay. Okay, so then you were in the middle of explaining these definitions. And so capital asset purchase.
It would be like buying a building,
right.
A tractor, buying. You're actually buying that capital asset. Mm-hmm. It's not something we own and then okay. improving.
And then construction versus capital improvement.
Yeah, construction would be, this is, so like a construction project, the way I always kind of my experience is I said there's always a phase one, phase two, phase three, usually groundwork. You got to establish the foundation, the ground, and then they start building the building. Phase three, you go in and, you know, equipment, do all the doors and all of that. So a construction project is really more stretched out and you have a lot more architectural fees, a lot more activity involved in that, but it's just construction and usually capture all those costs in that construction line because it's something you're building.
Be new construction?
New construction. The reason that you kind of go, you know, construction too is because a lot of those projects may cross over from one fiscal year to the other. So in doing that, you always have a construction in progress account on your balance sheet that reflects here's the activity. We're showing that this project's still going on. You carry it in construction in progress. That accounts for all the expenditures that you did in, say, fiscal year 21. Project continues on into fiscal year 22. You experience that cost in 22. Well, that CIP and that cap asset funds allows you to carry that 21 cost over. So when the job is complete, you capitalize the full amount of it in the construction line.
Okay. Chair?
Yes.
I really like where you're going with that because I think that's been something avoid, you know, something we've been missing in the way that we use our capital assets. Right. I think I mentioned last time we kind of just picture those just with new construction projects and things of that nature, but so a capital asset would be more in, for our government, for our terms, more of a building or a project of that sort. So just quickly, I want to talk about the land piece of it. So typically we fund out of the real property or the restricted property fund to purchase land. But we're not recognizing that at all on the capital assets, or we wouldn't, right?
Land is an asset.
But what was this where you would think that this would be
recognized?
And the reason I ask is in thinking about like the new PRT. So we purchased the 320, I think it was, an acreage.
Right.
And now we're getting ready to start new construction on that land. Would this be an area where you could see both of those assets at some point?
No, I think that as far as the area, meaning fund, like in this cap fund, we would maintain that, like I think in the real property repurchase revolving fund or the commercial property, I think that's the one that's called restricted property repurchase or fund, revolving fund. Those are where I'm looking for, and I think I set up a new account, land acquisitions, essentially what it costs to purchase that land. And, of course, land doesn't depreciate. You know, it gains value over the life. But typically, that land purchase, we would capture that and, you know, show that as an asset, but not depreciate it. But typically that's going to be in those commercial and those property revolving funds. And that I don't think that, to my knowledge, we're not putting money in the cap asset improvement fund to buy land. But that's where those key, and another key kind of term to think about in kind of construction, capital improvement, those areas too, is the difference between renovation and construction, right? And that's kind of the key. And we track the renovation line also, that kind of rolls up in the capital improvements on these reports. But yeah, and we've got in addition to kind of what we'll find during the audit presentation, but we knew cap assets from the 2020 audit were kind of highlighted as being, or I think from the 19 audit as being kind of not well reconciled. And we put a lot of work towards that. We started early on this year. And I think Mr. Armstrong has taken that position up, and he's really keeping an eye on capturing things moving forward, making sure we have it clean and we're capturing it at the time. And we're trying to get ahead of things. So.
Okay, thank you.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions regarding cap assets? Okay. Well, we have moved along.
I don't have any questions. I do have a quick comment.
Okay, speaker, go ahead.
So we are, in fact, discussing documents that are stamped confidential over the air. And we need you to resubmit these without the stamp. And
yeah, that was the comment I made a little earlier. He's going
sorry.
To.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I said I'll bring everything down right. Just mm-hmm. submit it in. And
but we did these that. Right before the meeting started, so we didn't have time to jump to that. So, but he will.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have moved really quickly through these opening a lot faster than I anticipated. So. It is 11. We have consultants on a time schedule that they're going to be on at, matter of fact, one of them is for the audit presentation. I wanted to ask the committee about moving that one up to 1 o'clock ahead of the health benefit. And I have talked to both presenters and they are good with that so that we could accommodate our consultants and when they were available today. So at 1 o'clock, we will go into the audit presentation with REDW, and at somewhere between 1:30 and 2, we'll go into health benefit with, or do I have that backwards? Anyway, the respective consultant with the respective title will be one, and then the other one by 2 o'clock. So we have an hour here, and I was wondering if we wanted to maybe jump down and talk about projected revenues. That'd be all right with the committee?
Yes, ma'am.
Me. No objections?
I love to talk about projected revenue.
And so if, Tyler, if you're ready for that, then we can have a discussion on it.
In talking earlier, that's where I should have accounted for that quarter of health funds that are coming in that are no longer IDC for 22. So that, I think, is the only thing that I'll need to update the sheet, but we can move forward with what I have. But I do want to make that note that
this one will stay confidential.
Well, no, the current projected revenue for 22 is version 3.
Uh-huh.
I will provide a version 4 that will include the dollars that we're getting from health for this last quarter on the MOU.
Okay. I don't think I quite followed that, but.
Yeah, I think as we get through it, when we look at 23, it'll stand out.
Okay. So I believe in the packet that Jordan sent out, it did have resolutions in it that are currently in place for 22 and 23. And these are revisions that Tyler has brought to revise those.
Yes, I don't.
Do you need those resolutions?
You get the resolution. I was actually going to pull up another document, but
okay,
I wasn't ready because I was
lunch. Okay, well, why don't we take like a 10-minute recess here and get ourselves together so that we're all on the same page, okay? So without objection, we'll recess for 10 minutes. We'll come back at 11:10.
So I was going to pull up the prior one.
Right.
Not to touch on every, like, this one stayed the same, that one stayed the same.
Okay. Okay.